Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, 40 years after Vietnam, we'll go in-depth on the lasting, devastating effects of Agent Orange on our veterans and their descendants. And we'll take a look at the Army Reserve here in Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Congratulations are in order for some remarkable Minnesota companies. Last weekend, the Minnesota Committee for Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve hosted its annual awards banquet. It's exciting to report that more than 60 employers in this state were nominated for awards by their employees. They know their employee may be gone a day here or there for military obligations. Sometimes they're even gone for weeks and months at a time, but it's evident in all cases that the employers know what fine employees military members make. Frankly, they are going above and beyond in supporting their service member. And for that, I am thankful. U.S. Bank is one such employer, receiving top state honors in the Pro Patria Award in the large business category. U.S. Bank has an active recruiting program aimed at service members and veterans, as well as a Proud to Serve committee that connects all employees in the military. The City of Rochester also received the Pro Patria Award in the public sector category. The Mayor of Rochester has led the way by connecting city leaders and business owners to support and hire returning veterans. Finally, ACES Tysol in Woodbury received a Pro Patria Award in the small business category. This company has not only supported their employees in the service, but has become an active member of this community's Yellow Ribbon Program. Congratulations to all those recognized at the Employer Support of the Guard Reserve Awards Banquet and the Pro Patria Award winners who are now advancing to the National Freedom Award Competition. Good luck.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Maynard Katerlik, a Vietnam Veterans of America Life member and the committee chair of Faces of Agent Orange. Maynard, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
Maynard, I know you were in the United States Navy and you served in Vietnam. Can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
Yeah, I joined the United States Navy in 1966 and got out in 1970. My first 2 years, I pretty much was off the coast of Vietnam. We plane guarded behind aircraft carriers for downed pilots. And then I spent a year in the rivers in Vietnam also that was an Army-Navy venture with the 9th Infantry Division and, of course, got out in March of 70.
And Maynard, how long have you been a member of the Minnesota State Council of the Vietnam Veterans of America?
I've been with them for about 25 years now.
And you were the commander for a while?
Yes, sir. I was commander for about 10 years. I just stepped down last June.
Well, what happened after 10 years, Maynard?
Well, I thought 10 years was enough, and also I put my energies into Faces of Agent Orange for the children and grandchildren now.
And, of course, we're both Vietnam veterans and have some issues as a result of Agent Orange, but can you tell me a little bit about Faces of Agent Orange? What is it? What are you doing?
Okay, Faces of Agent Orange actually came about 4 years ago. At our Louisville National Convention, there was a town hall meeting. They called it Faces of Agent Orange. And I had some communication with the communication director from Vietnam Veterans of America, Moki Porter, who was very much involved with what is happening with the veterans and their children and grandchildren. And at the town hall meeting, of course, Moki handed me the microphone first. And I gave her my testimony of what's going on with my children and my grandchildren. And then that kind of broke the ice for the other veterans, and the mic just went from one to the other, and that's where the town hall meeting started. We've done hundreds of them across the country to this day. We did two in Minnesota, both very successful. We plan on doing a couple more. And the purpose of these town hall meetings is, number one, spreading the word to veterans that what's happening to their children and grandchildren is not a coincidence. And what we're seeing on the testimonies from veterans is duplicating a lot of things, blood disorders, immune disorders, learning disabilities, autism, and the list goes on and on. And so that's how Faces Agent Orange surfaced.
We're speaking with Maynard Kaeterlik, the committee chair from Faces of Agent Orange from the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota of America on Minnesota Military Radio. Maynard, we should back up a little bit. You and I both know what Agent Orange is and what it was used for, but let's tell our listeners. It was a defoliant that we used in Vietnam, and millions of gallons of this were spread. How did you come in touch with it, and how did you see it, and what was it?
Okay, like I said, off the coast, you didn't really notice it, but up in country, up in the Mekong River where I served, I saw areas that at one point were green and vibrant. And after they sprayed the Agent Orange, 24 hours later, everything was dead and gray, scary looking. And so that was my exposure to it. Plus, even during the monsoon seasons, they could have sprayed it up by Cambodia or any place in Vietnam, and everything washed into the Mekong. And of course, we drank the water and bathed it, and so on and so forth. And so we were exposed pretty heavy, I think, the rivers, not taken away from any of the other military people that were in Vietnam. Everybody, I'm sure, got a dose of Agent Orange. But it was a stuff that it was just not used in Vietnam. It was used on perimeters, on bases, military bases in the United States. It was used in Okinawa, Thailand, of course, Vietnam, a lot of different places. So when we say exposure, we don't just say Vietnam veterans. We say the word veteran, because there's a lot of veterans on the DMZ. The Veterans Administration opened that up from 69 to 72 because it was used in Korea on the DMZ. So those guys were exposed, or those people, I should say, were exposed to Agent Orange there also.
And, of course, you said you saw it used on the rivers, and it was pretty effective in knocking down all of that foliage and opening up some sight lines so that they couldn't hide on you and so you don't get attacked.
Yeah. Little did they know Admiral Zumwalt ordered the spraying because of that very reason, so there wouldn't be the concealment for the enemy. Little did he know his son was on the Kamaw Peninsula in the rivers, and his son died in 1988 of two bad cancers. And little did he know he'd save lives at that time, but it took his son's life.
Now, Maynard, we had no idea when we were in Vietnam that we were being exposed to something that could affect our lives. And for many years, we either didn't know or someone wasn't telling us the truth. How did that all change?
Well, I think it's because of the service organizations, their perseverance to fight the good fight. I can speak for Vietnam Veterans of America because I've been with them a long time, and they've done a lot for service connections for a lot of different diseases and cancers and so on and so forth that have surfaced right now as we speak. There's about 16, 17 presumptive ailments that they service connect you for, but I think Tom and I both know that there are a lot more that could be service connected, so I think, for lack of a better word, the fight keeps going on, and we have to take care of our military people, whether it's Vietnam or the modern day warriors or the old warriors. We're all in this together. We have to take care of one another.
So basically, everywhere that we've sent our military, whether it was Vietnam or the first Gulf War or Afghanistan or Iraq, there are different conditions and different things that affect our service members, and we have to deal with those when they come home.
Yes, sir. You take the Gulf War syndrome. That's a big issue for those warriors. The oil well fires in Iraq and just a lot of different toxic substances that are used in military warfare, and we need to take care of everybody.
Maynard, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of these presumptive diseases, how they're affecting our troops, and how they're affecting their descendants. We're speaking with Maynard Kaeterlik, the committee chair, Faces of Agent Orange, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Maynard Katterlick, the committee chair of Faces of Agent Orange from the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America. Maynard, just before we went to break, we talked about presumptive diseases. Can you explain that term and how it's used by the VA hospital?
Well, when they say presumptive, they never admit that it actually is a disease that of anything they sprayed on us or took internally or whatever. So it's presumptive. They never say that, yeah, this was caused by your exposure to Agent Orange. And there are, as we speak, I believe there are 17 presumptive ailments as we speak for the veterans that were exposed to Agent Orange.
Maynard, I'm looking at kind of a definition of the presumptives, and it says veterans who served anywhere in Vietnam between January 1962 and May 1975 are presumed to have been exposed to herbicides such as Agent Orange, and the definitions say that applies to anyone who set foot in Vietnam or served on a ship while it operated on an inland waterways of Vietnam, and I think you told me that they're working on that definition as well. Didn't you tell me they're trying to test pouring some stuff in the rivers and seeing how far out it goes?
Yeah, I understand there was a group that actually poured a dye in the Mekong. And one that really jumps out is the blue water sailors that served off the coast, some of them maybe 3 miles, some of them closer in. And the VA did service connect them, but they pulled it back. And I know of one group that said they'd poured dye in the Mekong, and it went as far as 16 to 20 miles out to sea. And being a blue water and a brown water sailor, I know that we drank the water, which was run through evaporators, which certainly did not take, just took the salt out of the water, and we used the water out of the ocean. And so the dioxin was still in the water. And if these people were close, they certainly were exposed to Agent Orange. And I know Congressman Walz from Minnesota is still fighting the fight for the blue water sailors.
And they're still researching it because this affected people where the Agent Orange was stored, those that applied it. Those that maybe were exposed to it after it was sprayed, the guys that were out in the jungle, and of course, the sailors that were on the waterways and all of that. Now, the presumptive diseases, there's a whole list of them here, but there's some common ones that a lot of people have heard about. One of them is diabetes type 2, and then Parkinson's disease, some neuropathy, and one you have personal experience with, prostate cancers.
Yeah. There's like say 16, 17 presumptive service connections as we speak. I think you and I both know that there's probably a lot more than that, and we don't know how old we'll be by the time they add those others.
Well, we'll see. But I imagine I'm sure there are a lot of Vietnam veterans out there that have had some issues since they've come back, and they haven't related any of that to their service in Vietnam. I certainly had no idea that diabetes type 2 had anything to do with Agent Orange until we started doing the show and I started talking to some experts, and they said, you better go out and talk to the VA. So what would you say to our Vietnam veterans that are out there listening today?
I would say to the Vietnam veterans, I understand it's 75 to 80% do not use the VA system. And what we've done in Vietnam Veterans America on the national level, if we started this Veterans Health Council, what it is to let the private physicians all across the country ask the question, are you a veteran? And it's possible that what's going on with you could be from your exposure to Agent Orange. So veterans really need to use the VA hospital, in my opinion, and then be in the know. There are so many veterans out there that have hepatitis, have diabetes, it keeps going on and on, that aren't aware it is because of their exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam. And I certainly do encourage not just Vietnam veterans, but all veterans of the VA use the VA, because then you're more in the know on what's going on with diseases.
Maynard, you've been studying this for years and watched how it's all unfolded and the fact that the VA hospitals now are recognizing it. How many of the civilian doctors do you think link Agent Orange with diabetes and Parkinson's and prostate cancer? Do they even think about that?
Well, in my opinion, just an example, my granddaughter has a bad rash, and I don't know, nobody has put a name on it, in her private area for going on 3 years now. And when I tell the doctors, I usually go with her and her mom to see the doctor, and I tell them I'm a Vietnam veteran and been exposed to Agent Orange. And you see that deer's eye stare in the headlights from these doctors. And they really need to know that a lot of this is happening in these children and grandchildren of veterans. It's not a coincidence because their exposure, their grandfathers and fathers that were exposed to Agent Orange during their time in Vietnam.
We're speaking with Maynard Katerlik, the committee chair of Faces of Agent Orange, from the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America on Minnesota Military Radio. Maynard, wanted to talk a little bit about the birth defects. I'm looking at an article here about the birth defect research for children. And one of the things that they talk about is they have been collecting information from thousands of families, and they found some consistent patterns of disabilities in their children. And they talk about the fact that with Vietnam veterans' children, we found immune problems, we found learning and attention problems, thyroid problems, and childhood cancers. There's been a lot of research on this in recent years, and how is this affecting our children and our, and as you say, our grandchildren and future generations?
Well, with the Faces of Agent Orange, we're bringing this testimony forward from a lot of the veterans that are exposed, and Betty McDessie, she has information too, and she started the birth defect research for children. She's asking Vietnam veterans to come forward and register their children and grandchildren, and she's been very instrumental in the Faces of Agent Orange and has done tons of research herself and is a very knowledgeable individual, and I'm sure we'll be including Betty with our legislation that's soon to be.
Now, you were telling me earlier that there's some legislation pending in Congress. What's this about, and who's working on it, and where does it stand?
Okay, about a year ago, this last April, I went to Congressman Walz. Of course, he's my congressman from my district, and Congressman Walz is a good veterans advocate, and I think he's very, very good with the veteran community and a veteran himself. And asked and explained to him where we were going with the Faces of Agent Orange and what we're doing with town hall meetings and so on and so forth. And we asked him if he would help us with legislation to take care of our children and grandchildren that are suffering from so many different diseases and ailments. And he said he would do that. And so time went by. I just got back 3 weeks ago from D.C. Talking to his legislative staffer, and he's working with it, and of course we talked about it, so we're all talking apples and apples and oranges, and so this is soon to be, and we're asking all the congressmen from Minnesota and the senators are also from Minnesota and all across the country, when this bill comes forward, that it be supported by all the congressmen and senators across the country, because these are our children, and we care about our children. They need our help. And so this legislation will have a HR number soon, I'm sure. I'm going to guess in a couple months. And I just got through talking to the staffer yesterday. And so he's working diligently on it. And so it's going to, if it's passed and it actually happens, our children and grandkids are going to be taken care of for whatever ailments they have. And you talk about research. Yeah, there's been tons and tons of research done, but they are going to do it again, because that's just part of the political process, is you have to do your own research for a bill like this. And so they're going to do more research on it. And so we hope that it be successful. We're definitely going to be behind it. We're the driving force, and hopefully soon, well, it's going to be an uphill battle, but we fight the good fight, and we are going to win this battle.
Maynard, we just got about a minute left, and I know that there's a lot of Vietnam veterans that aren't members of Vietnam Veterans of America, and one of the benefits of joining, one of the couple are, you get some information on what's going on and updates on the research, and also you can lend your voice to VVA so that when you're out talking to Congress, when you're talking to the state legislature, you're representing more and more people. If our Vietnam veterans want to join, where do they go?
Well, they actually can certainly call me or Mark Mattson. He is the president and the chair right now. And my number, if you need my number, would be
Is there a website that they can go to?
Oh, there is, yeah, vva.org. And you certainly can get a membership from there. And then we definitely need the numbers because Vietnam veterans typically have not been joiners after the war. And we definitely, and it's a good, we put out a newspaper that's got a lot of good information on ailments and what's happening with the Vietnam veteran community.
So for more information on Faces of Agent Orange or to join the Vietnam Veterans of America Minnesota State Council, go to vva.org. Maynard, we're about out of time. I'd like to thank you for stopping by the show today and giving us an update on Agent Orange.
Thank you so much, Tom.
That was Maynard Katterlick, the committee chair, Faces of Agent Orange, Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota, Minnesota State Council on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us in a moment. We'll take a look at the Army Reserve here in Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll take a look at the Army Reserve here in Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
Yesterday, we celebrated Armed Forces Day. America's men and women in uniform perform their duties with the utmost dignity, honor, and professionalism. Durable and sustainable peace is only possible by the efforts of the armed forces, both past and present, and their families. Our armed forces are also parents, spouses, partners, sons, and daughters. Members of the armed forces are forging a better future for our nation and the world. The freedoms we enjoy today would not be possible without their bravery, pride, courage, and sacrifice. I thank our armed forces for keeping America strong and secure.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to talk about the Army Reserve here in Minnesota is Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Osland, who is the commander of the 364th Public Affairs Operations Center from the Army Reserve in Minnesota. Colonel Osland, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sir, first I want to ask you about your career a little bit. How long have you been in the Army?
I have been in uniform for 26 years. I joined in 1987. I was a private E-2. Went to basic training, went to AIT, and then back into college and got my degree and came back in as an officer.
So we always like those guys that started out as enlisted folks first.
You bet. You know, basic training is a experience everybody ought to have.
It was an experience, that's for sure, sir.
Right.
And so you've been commissioned for over 23 years.
That's right.
And deployed a couple of times. Can you tell us, you've traveled a lot and went to...
Traveled a lot over the years. I spent 16 years as a traditional Army Reserve soldier, 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks out of the year, until 2001, was mobilized shortly after 9/11, served in the Army Operations Center in Washington, D.C., when the Army went from routine operations to 24-hour operations in the Operations Center to manage the war, wars after a little while, of course. So spent some time back there and then entered the AGR program. It's the Active Guard Reserve Program, full-time Army Reserve soldier. Deployed in 2006 for 15 months in Iraq, and after that came home, went to Washington for 3 years, down to North Carolina, and we were enjoying the sun and the warmth of North Carolina, and the Army called and gave me a great opportunity to come to Minnesota. So we've been here for the last 6 months commanding this unit.
Colonel, when I look at your biography, I'm just curious, how did you get to be a public affairs officer?
Well, that kind of happened by accident. I uh, I worked in advertising agencies in the Seattle area, and of course was a traditional reserve soldier. And one of my raiders in the Army Reserve said, kind of scratched his head and said, "Don't you work in an advertising agency?" And I said, "Yep." He said, "Well, you need to go work in public affairs." And that was my introduction. And next thing you knew, I had orders assigning me to a public affairs unit, and I've been doing public affairs on and off ever since.
Talk about being in the hot seat. You get to explain a lot of things, don't you?
Well, you get a lot of opportunity for success, maybe. But absolutely. You get to explain it. It's the best job in the Army, I think, because you get to see everything. If you want to be an infantryman for a couple of days, you go find a story with the infantry. But you don't have to stay there all month, because you can go on and do a story on the on aviators or medical. You get to see the entire Army as a public affairs soldier or officer.
So you're tuned into all aspects of the military service.
You bet.
Sir, we've been on the air for 2.5 years now, and we've had on people from every service. We've talked a lot about the Minnesota National Guard on the show because the Minnesota National Guard helps us put this on. Could you explain to our listeners what's the difference between United States Army Reserve and the Army National Guard?
Sure. Well, first of all, we're all soldiers. So if you're in the Army Guard or the Army Reserve or active duty Army, we're all soldiers. And we love our brothers and sisters in the National Guard and the active component. But the real difference between the National Guard and the Army Reserve is that the Army Reserve is always a federal force. The National Guard has both a state mission and a federal mission when activated by the president. So routine operations by the National Guard are directed by the governor, and they're available for natural disaster, for consequence management within the state, and they do a fantastic job of that. The Army Reserve is always in Title 10 status, U.S. Code Title 10, which is federal. Our missions come through the national command chain from the president down through the Secretary of Defense to the department and on its way down to us. So we are not available to the governor for that consequence management or natural disaster unless the governor asks the president, and then we get orders to support civil authority.
So, Colonel, the U.S. Army Reserve in Minnesota here in the Twin Cities is on the campus out by the 934th, along with its Army,
That's right.
Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps Reserve.
Joint Base Fort Snelling, absolutely. That's where most of the Army Reserve in the state are. There's 1,200 soldiers, Army Reserve soldiers, who are stationed at Fort Snelling. Most of them are traditional Reserve soldiers, the 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks out of the year. There's about 200 full-timers there.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Aslan, the commander of the 364th Public Affairs Operations Center of the Army Reserve. I want to say Minnesota National
that's,
Guard,
that's okay.
But it's
I love
the
Minnesota.
United States Army Reserve. Sorry, sir, on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, you said you have 1,200 soldiers in the Army Reserve in Minnesota. Can you tell us a little bit about capabilities and mission?
You bet. Actually, there's a little over 3,000. There are 3,200 Army Reserve soldiers statewide. There's about 1,200 at Fort Snelling. There's another 800 up at Arden Hills, and then there's other reserve centers around the state. But we have there's an engineer brigade headquarters here in Minnesota. There are two of the battalions. One of them is a vertical construction battalion here in St. Cloud. There's another battalion down in Mankato. There's a civil affairs battalion. Civil affairs soldiers are what we call warrior diplomats. They go to countries and work on infrastructure and nurturing governance in third world countries, in Iraq and Afghanistan, Afghanistan now in the Horn of Africa. They're working with the coalition troops in everything from helping local security forces train and get equipped to helping build schools to figuring out what's needed in the local area and providing those services either through the coalition or through non-governmental organizations. There's a combat support hospital that is headquartered here in Minnesota. And then there are a number of other units, including transportation, postal operations, psychological operations. So there's quite a breadth of talents in the Army Reserve here in Minnesota.
So, Colonel, since September 11, 2001, the National Guard has seen thousands of their soldiers and airmen called to duty and sent on deployments. How has that affected the Army Reserve? Are you called up, and for what kind of duration, and in what type of jobs?
Absolutely. All the jobs that we train for, we have been called up for in the last 12 years. Of the 3,200 soldiers that are assigned here in Minnesota, we have deployed 2,500 of them in the last 6 years. So two-thirds of those soldiers have deployed very recently. There is a unit out of Arden Hills that is deployed right now. There's a portion of the Civil Affairs Battalion that is deployed to the Horn of Africa. We have a unit out of Fort Snelling that is deployed to Afghanistan right now. So we are intimately involved in the deployments, as is the National Guard. And that's the nice thing about the modern U.S. Army is it can't survive without the National Guard or the Army Reserve. We have capabilities in these two forces that the active component doesn't have. So we are in this fight together.
Things have really changed in the last decade or so for both the Guard and the Reserve. Do your soldiers go out as a unit, or do they occasionally go out as replacements and go out on an individual basis, or all of the above?
All of the above, but we try to deploy them as units. They train as units. They get to know each other. They're a cohesive unit. So that's what that's the goal, is to send them out as a unit. But at times we do what we used to call cross-level, individual fills for jobs. That's an inevitable need of the Army, is to send individual soldiers for an individual task.
So the Army would put something out and say, we need this specialty here and there, and your Army Reserve soldiers can volunteer for that.
They can volunteer. Deploy. Sometimes they're voluntold. Sometimes they're they're mobilized. So it happens in any number of ways.
So, sir, would it be correct to assume that since Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon is pulling down the number of active duty Army soldiers, that they're putting more pressure on not just the National Guard, but also the Army Reserve to supplement the active duty force whenever needed?
And absolutely. The writing's on the wall that a lot of missions that the active component would have been able to do, they're just not going to be able to do all of them. So the National Guard and the Army Reserve will pick up some of those missions. The same squeeze that's going on the active component right now is also happening to the National Guard. The Army Reserve is not coming down in force structure, but who knows what will happen in the next 2 or 3 years. Right now, we are maintaining 205,000, and we're projected to maintain that same 205,000 for the next 2 years.
Colonel, one last question for the break, and that would be, with all of these deployments and active duty engagements on behalf of your soldiers, is where's your readiness status now compared to where it might have been 20 years ago?
Well, all the pressures, all of the deployment stress, all of the things you hear about in the news, readiness is at an all-time high. Morale is at an all-time high. Our soldiers reenlist. They want to be there. They're proud to be there. And that's just a wonderful thing. I'm so proud of our soldiers for putting up with all that they've had to put up with for the last 12 years, and yet they still show up on battle assembly weekends ready to do whatever they're asked to do.
Is it possible that there's one U.S. Army Reserve member in the state of Minnesota that doesn't fully understand that they're probably going to get called to active duty?
I don't think so. I think all of us understand now that we're going somewhere eventually.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about a typical deployment. We've been speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Osland, commander of the 364th Public Affairs Operations Center from the United States Army Reserve on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting with Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Osland, commander of the 364th Public Affairs Ops Center for the United States Army Reserve. Colonel, I'd like to talk about a couple of typical deployments. I know that when we were building up forces in Afghanistan so that we could get a little more control over there, all of a sudden the president said we want to send over 30,000 more troops.
Right.
There was a little problem there, wasn't there?
Yeah, just a little bit. Where do you put them all?
And the 372nd Engineer Brigade, which is part of the Minnesota's U.S. Army Reserve, was there to do a job. Can you tell us about that deployment?
Well, they deployed, this is the brigade headquarters and two of the battalions. So we're talking a little over 1,000 soldiers deployed to Paktika province Afghanistan. And part of their mission when the surge was announced was to build infrastructure to house, feed, clothe, shower, and work for all these soldiers that were coming into Afghanistan. So there was a large forward operating base called Sharana, And the brigade got the mission to make sure that we were ready for these soldiers to come in to Afghanistan. So they spent a great deal of time building building up this infrastructure, which is what these units are meant to do. These are construction units. They build buildings and they pave roads. So it was a fantastic mission. The other part of their mission, by the way, was to mentor the Afghan troops in engineering practices. They have to learn how to build infrastructure to support their own government and their own training. So the other half of the mission for the brigade was to work directly with the Afghan military in training and building infrastructure for their force. And then also building infrastructure for local government. If there was a need in a local village for a well or a school building or a clinic, the brigade worked with the local government and non-governmental organizations and helped build some of those that infrastructure as well.
So, Colonel, on very short notice, you had a big job to do because you had 30,000 more troops coming in.
Absolutely.
And one of the unique features of the United States military is wherever we send them in the world, they're self-sufficient.
That's right.
We send along the engineers, we send along everybody else, and whether they're in the jungle or in the middle of a desert, we have a tendency to make ourselves as comfortable as possible, and it's units like the 372nd that do a great job of helping with that, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. And they take great pride in doing that. The history, if you will, is absolutely soldiers will do whatever they need to do to have a little comforts of home. And the engineer brigade was able to do that on a large scale.
Colonel, I know that that was a year or two ago when we had the surge. The surge is over, and now we've drawn all of our soldiers out of and all of our service members out of Iraq, and we're drawing down in Afghanistan.
Yep.
Do your engineers have a purpose or a mission in that?
Well, absolutely. There is a engineer company that that is getting ready to deploy to Afghanistan now. They're down at Fort Bliss getting their final certification to go over to Afghanistan. And their mission, for the most part, is going to be deconstruction. So they are taking apart infrastructure that was put in place to support the coalition and taking it apart and repurposing the materials to either Afghan needs or elsewhere in the theater and taking down infrastructure so that when we're ready to actually leave, as we draw down troops, we're not leaving a bunch of facilities in place that our taxpayers paid for.
So, sir, I would guess that that's a two-part deal. One part of it is there's a lot of equipment we want to bring home because it's valuable and we can reuse it. And the other part was, did we have some agreements with Afghanistan on what we
could
leave behind?
Absolutely. If you remember back, we told the world that we were not going to build permanent infrastructure in Afghanistan. So part of that living up to those promises is deconstructing any infrastructure that we built that the Afghan government doesn't specifically need or want.
Colonel, we just got about a minute left, and I want to thank you for coming in to visit with us today. But the United States Army Reserve in Minnesota, are you still looking for some recruits? Is there always a need?
We're always looking for recruits, absolutely. And every one of our units is looking for smart, strong, patriotic young men and women to come and serve and write that blank check that we've all written to our country that includes up to and including life, if necessary. So come join us.
Colonel, you've been at it for quite a few years. What would you say to our young people today? Is it a good career? You learn a lot?
It is, absolutely. The Army has been extremely good to me and my family. The Army's not for everybody, but for us, it was the best choice and awfully proud to serve. Would love to welcome you into our ranks.
Colonel, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Oslin, commander of the 364th Public Affairs Operations Center of the United States Army Reserve on Minnesota Military Radio. And now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard, joining me is Tim Leonard. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Tim, what's going on with the Patriot Guard and all your riders?
Well, we've still got our missions coming in. Unfortunately, we have people that have been in the military that are no longer with us, and we want to be there to honor them.
So those happen all the time?
They happen all the time. You know, we've got a lot of World War II, Vietnam vet, Korean vets that are going to a better place, and we want to be there to help their families and see them off.
And it's an important and emotional thing that you get your riders to come out with their flags and stand duty, stand the line.
Stand the line and make sure that it's peaceful.
It's all about what? Honor?
Honor, dignity, and respect.
Who's eligible to be a Patriot Guard rider?
Anyone. We welcome everybody. Car, motorcycle, any way you can get there. Even parachute, Tom.
Even parachute. We learned that last time. So they can travel. They can travel any way they want. They don't have to be veterans. They don't have to be Vietnam veterans.
They don't have to be any veterans. They don't need to be any special people. We get them from all walks of life. Lawyers to journeymen.
Just need a flag and a pole and a good heart.
Yep, flag, pole, and a big heart.
All right. Now, I know you've got your big annual event coming up. When is it?
We do. We have the Patriot Ride, which is on June 15th this year, which is Saturday, up at Lions Park up in Ham Lake. If you go out to the webpage of Patriot Guard or mnpatriotguard.org or patriotride.org.
Thepatriotride.org.
The Patriot Guard.
We were out there last year, and before the ride started, there's kind of a carnival atmosphere. There's food, there's people speaking, there's some music. It's you don't have to have a motorcycle to come out and wish and get them started, do you?
Nope. And a lot of people come out there just to see 3,000 motorcycles leave one little park all at one time.
They make quite a racket, don't they?
We make a racket. We traveled quite a distance. I remember one year we did a Patriot Ride, and the Patriot Ride started at the park. And 17 miles away, I was at the front of it, and the last one were just leaving.
That's quite a line of motorcycles.
That's quite a line of motorcycles.
If you haven't seen it, I'd recommend going out. For more information on that, go to thepatriotride.org. That's June 15th.
Yes.
And you're welcome, anybody that wants to come out, and all we need is some good weather this year.
Yes, good weather.
All right. And the Patriot Guard riders, you've still got as many as ever, but all they have to do is go to the website to sign up?
Yes. All they have to do is go to the web page, and on the left side it says sign up, join us, and sign up. We'll put you on the email list and get you the information out there.
And if you're interested in that, it's mnpatriotguard.org. Tim, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Before we go, there are a few upcoming events we'd like to mention. First, Richfield will be dedicating their beautiful new Honoring All Veterans Memorial on Memorial Day at 2 p.m. at Veterans Park. Major General Rick Nash, Minnesota's Adjutant General, will be the featured speaker. Next up, Minnesota's Ride for Healing kicks off May 27th in St. Paul. The week-long ride will cover four corners of the state and will be capped off by a June 1st rally weekend in the Brainerd Lakes area. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veterans Memorial Education Center. Then on Sunday, June 9th, at Lake Minnetonka, there will be a special muskie fishing event welcoming Minnesota's veterans. Proceeds will benefit the Wounded Warrior Project. Also, we'd like to remind you that if you're listening to us on our flagship station, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, tune in on Memorial Day from 6 to 9 a.m. for our third annual Memorial Day live show. Again, that's this Memorial Day from 6 to 9 a.m. on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, and also on iHeartRadio. For details on all these events and more, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to us on MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Maynard Katterlick, Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Ostlund, Tim Leonhardt, Commissioner Larry Shelledo, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we take a look back at the Red Bulls' historic deployment to Bosnia, and we'll discover a Minnesota organization's mission to pay tribute to the troops. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.